Welcome back to Copper Country Today. I'm your host, Rick Allen. And coming up on August 2nd is the primary for Michigan. And one of the biggest decisions that we'll be making is choosing the Republican and Democrat candidates for first congressional district that will be going head-to-head in November. And one of the Republican candidates is on the line right now. We're going to be talking with Jason Allen. He's a Republican going up against Tom Casperson and Jack Bergman.
Good morning, sir. How are you?
I'm great. Jason, how are you doing?
I'm eating chicken and pancakes everywhere. I'm loving it.
That must be a fun tour, huh?
It is, man. I mean, you know, when you go from Ironwood to Harrisville to Free Soil, it just becomes an adventure every day.
Well, Jason, this isn't the your first time around the block, so to speak. No. What are you seeing that's different this time?
I think probably the first issue kind of in an overall is there's a lot more concern out there about the national direction. And that is overarching, and if you look at it from a pervasiveness, it's probably the aspect of where the jobs and the communities are going to be headed. Conversations that we've had in Houghton, the conversations we've had in Marquette, the conversations we've had in the Sioux, and the conversations we've had in Alpena all sort of reflect on an uneasiness of the general direction of base manufacturing and sort of the economy. In 2010 and 2006, when I ran before, there was a little bit more optimism in regards to that we're going to kind of build ourselves back up.
Now, again, I'm talking with Jason Allen. He is a candidate for our first congressional district. And so, Jason, if that were to fall to you, you would be headed to Washington in November if you got that point. And right now, as we're recording this interview, the Republican National Convention is going on. How closely do you watch that?
We enjoyed watching it the last several evenings, and I really was impressed with Newt Gingrich's speech, and I thought our nominee, Pence, did a very nice job and sort of laid out the territory and the directions that we're headed. When you think through the directions of where America is going, they were able to summarize this in regards to jobs, getting our defenses rebuilt, getting America back on track with health care and overhauling Obamacare or eliminating it. Those are the types of things I really enjoyed, and I thought the response and enthusiasm was good.
What's your opinion of the media coverage? And don't be afraid to hurt a media person's feelings. And as far as how is it being portrayed?
I mean, you know, I think that, you know, mainstream media often is predisposed to dislike the grand old party. You got to kind of take that in through that prism. And so that's probably always been a continual frustration. But, you know, there's also so many other venues to watch the formatting and the programming that there are other ways to get the information. The things that you've got to look at it is that, you know, in comparison to when I went to my first Republican National Convention in 1984 and had the opportunity to meet my wife, it's much different today.
What would be, let me rephrase it this way. We see in Michigan, our own governor kind of shying away from the presidential election, whether that is Trump-focused or not, he doesn't want to say. Do you think that if the ticket went Republican in November and you were on it, President Trump, you have a President Trump, would you be able to work with Trump?
I'm supporting Donald Trump. He's, as you know, he won every county in the first congressional district except for Houghton. Really was able to communicate to the concerns that were brought up. He's our nominee, and I will support him. I can't hold the governor accountable for what he's doing.
Okay. How do you think this would all play out for our area, especially northern Michigan and the Upper Peninsula?
Well, I think Upper Michigan has the opportunities for a lot of entrepreneurs and small business people to be able to grow their businesses and their and create economic prosperity. I think, you know, when you take a look and analyze where President Trump wants to head, or our nominee Donald Trump wants to head, one, we've got to be able to talk about streamlining the tax code. Two is to be able to, you know, reduce a lot of the government regulation. And when you take a look at the speeches last evening, those were two of the big issues. We've got to put a strategy down on paying down the debt, and at $19 trillion, and then you've got unencumbered liabilities on top of that. It's a very, very large number. And we've got to come up with a way, and they addressed those over the last couple of weeks.
Well, we'll definitely talk about all of those issues. We're going to get to the economy. We're going to get to immigration. We're going to get to well, just about anything we can in the short amount of time that we have. But let's start with something that struck me with bits that I've been able to watch at the convention, and that is, you know, there definitely is an appreciation for our firefighters and our law enforcement and our military. And with the climate that is in the on the national scene right now, this the climate of violence towards police officers, it was at least nice to see people standing on that side and speaking up for, you know, the toughest, well, you know, got to be one of the toughest jobs we have here in the country, and that's enforcing our laws.
I think it was a reoccurring and wonderful theme. When you take a look at some of the tragedies that have occurred in the last weeks throughout the United States, the people on the thin blue line are those individuals that are keeping our neighborhoods and our communities safe. They're the first people involved with Homeland Security. They're the ones that are dealing with domestic and family issues, and we should hold them in a place of honor. I think one of the speakers last evening talked about, certainly if they do something wrong, we have to hold them accountable. But we have to have a heart of gratitude for their efforts, and it is an amazing, when you sit down and talk to the diversity of issues that, you know, the sheriffs in our region are facing, our local law enforcement are facing. You know, whether it's the increase in drug use from the methamphetamines or the heroin or any one of those types of things, to increase problems within families that they're often called upon to enforce and kind of referee, it is a very, very difficult job.
What are you hearing? And what I mean by hearing, as far as what is your understanding of the grievances by groups like Black Lives Matter and those who are trying to draw attention to what they perceive as violence by law enforcement to certain segments of the population, in this case, you know, namely our African-American population?
And Rick, I appreciate everybody's concern, but you know, when you look at Police Lives Matter, that's what we need to be really thinking through. And certainly, you know, there are methods to improve the quality of law enforcement, and certainly hope that chiefs and senior leadership are modernizing the way that they interact and address public issues. But we have to hold our police at a higher level, because of the amount of efforts that are being put forth. And I'm really grateful for the thousands of police officers around the state of Michigan.
Police Lives Matter. Now, did you coin that? Because I have not heard that bantered around yet.
No, I did not coin that. I have not heard that bantered around, but it is a very a good way to look at it when you take a look at the sacrifices that, you know, whether it be our local sheriffs or local police officers in our towns and villages, and our federal agents or state agents, they are in a very tough situation. We have to honor them.
Would you seek to make any changes at all, just based on, you know, some of the responses and the grievances that have been made?
In the first congressional district, the aspect of so many of these laws are taken forth by the state of Michigan. And I think that question is better posed to your state house candidates and asking them if there are other areas. You know, certainly if there are federal issues involving FBI or Bureau of Alcohol, Fire, and Tobacco, we will take a look at that. But so many of these policies and issues are taken care of on a local level.
Okay, well, that sets it up for this next question then. There is call for federal level policing, and that's sort of taking the power away from local levels and putting it more into the federal government. The argument being that it would be more controlled, more oversight, more regulation of our law enforcement. What would be your response to that?
I think it's pretty clear that in the Constitution, in the debates that were going on within the Constitution, that a significant amount of law enforcement should be kept at a local level, and those decisions need to be made by the local citizens on the level and types of law enforcement based on the needs of the community. Right. And what we see in a Detroit is different than what we see in a Houghton. And those are going to be decisions that are made by the local communities. Certainly, you know, if there's lots of corruption going on, like they've talked about in police departments throughout the United States, that's a federal issue. But I firmly believe that local units of government, townships, villages, and cities have the best ability in counties to make decisions on who and how their law enforcement is operated.
Jason, if you find yourself in the seat in Congress come November, and I know you have to get, we first going to have to address the primary coming up here in August. Of course, you are running against Tom Casperson and Mr. Bergman, who is also seeking the same nomination. And over on the Democrat side, they got their own battle there, too, with Lon Johnson and with Jerry Cannon. But just looking ahead, I guess, a little bit further down the line to see what you would do. When the issue of immigration comes back up, and it most certainly will come back up after the presidential election is over, you know, we seem to run the gamut of from a giant wall to open borders. Where would you fall?
First issue is that we have to secure our borders. And I don't know, Rick, if you've had the opportunity to be over in Sault Ste. Marie, but it is at times disconcerting sort of what is happening on that border. And I understand we've got, you know, Coast Guard and other border folks there. But we have to secure our border. We've got to stop these executive orders. I know that the most recent one was overturned. And then we can have a serious discussion on the types of immigration that come forward. But until we have those things in place, it's very difficult to have a serious discussion about the policies and implication of immigration.
What problems are we seeing in Sault Ste. Marie? I haven't heard of any as far as immigration goes.
If you take a look at the vastness of the border, Sugar Island and the whole cut, we have seen individuals migrating across from Sioux, Ontario, not going through traditional border security areas. And that is as fluid, it's not as serious as the South is, but we need to be mindful that the border is not just in Texas, in California, in Arizona, but we also need to take a serious look at our northern borders.
If somebody came up with a brilliant plan that prohibited any future illegal immigration, and I know that's a utopian, pipe dream type of thing, but it just brings up the question of, okay, if you've solved that, what do you do about the people that are already here illegally?
I think you can't have that discussion until you get the first issue taken care of, which is the aspect of what we need to do on the borders. And then, you know, the president's been, you know, just out of control on sort of these executive orders. Then we can have a serious discussion.
As we mentioned, you have a primary coming up here on August 2nd. People are going to be heading to the polls. There's a number of great local issues that are on there, as well as political candidates to choose from. Your primary candidates, I should say, is, you know, of course, Casperson and Bergman. What separates you from them?
Thank you very much. First of all, coming from a small business background, I understand what the 190,000 small businesses have and struggle with to make payroll, to deal with government regulation. I've worked very diligently as a veteran. I'm an Eagle Scout. And in my heart, want to overhaul the tax structure You know, if you read through the 600 pages of the United States Tax Code, it's so confusing. Help our veterans, rebuild our military, and not move forward in any kind of a discussion about increasing the debt until we have a plan to balance the budget. And those are what I would call traditional conservative values that set me aside from my opponents.
Now, on veterans, we've seen disturbing reports of how veterans were treated in facilities throughout the state, a couple of different ones, of course, in national level. The person currently sitting in first congressional seat, Benishek, is focused on the VA and problems that have been reported from there. Would you continue that fight, take it in another direction, or do something similar? What would you do?
Well, Rick, one of the things, and we talked about this when I was in your studio earlier in the spring, is the awareness of the benefits. And if you take a look at the Keweenaw County, Houghton County, Baraga, you've got roughly about 10 to 13% of the members are veterans. What I think we've got to do is first take an awareness of the benefits that are available to our widows, to our elderly veterans, because often they're not understanding, have gotten frustrated because of the bureaucracies. Then the next issue is then we have to work through the overhaul of VA services, because if you're driving from Houghton to Milwaukee for basic treatment, Green Bay, that is not a viable option. Now, certainly you've got the Iron Mountain Hospital, but that is still quite a truck from your listening area. So then the next area we've got to figure out is then how can we make that more simpler for the veteran to access his benefits and health care?
Jason, there had been talk recently, and I hadn't heard if it was ever finalized or really what happened to it, but making it available for veterans can just go see a local doctor but then still be covered under the veterans benefits. Is that something that's still being tossed around?
Well, the first issue is that there is a variety of opinions on that. I yield with more local control, but groups like the American Legion, the VFW, which I know you've got very robust chapters in Houghton, are advocating on a national level to keep a strong centralized VA healthcare system. And so one of the things that we've got to work through is then to where is the VA good? And we know that in PTSD, we know that in many of the sort of specialty amputee areas that they're very good at. But there is, in my opinion, no reason why a veteran that has to need basic health care can't go to their local doctor. But there are a variety of opinions on that. Okay.
As a medical issue, it's getting more and more attention, and rightfully deserving, I believe. PTSD, these post-traumatic stress disorders, the invisible wounds, and also veteran suicides. There's been some recent attempts to be able to draw more attention to this. I believe our Senator Gary Peters has, was among those trying to push to get our servicemen who were given less than an honorable discharge that for issues that could be tied to these invisible wounds. Would that be something that you would like to see happen as well?
Well, the first issue that we've got to take a look at, Gary, is overhaul the process of departure from the United States military. Now, if you think it through, most enlisted spend months going through basic training to learn how to be a soldier, an airman, or a Marine, or a Coast Guard. Serving in the Navy, whatever that skill set is. In general, when they depart from the military service, at best, they get usually about a week's worth of sort of lectures on what to do. Much of these problems could be addressed by just making sure that they've got signed up for VA care,
They've got their disabilities documented. They are aware of the benefits that they have and signed up for. Then I think the next phase out of this is then going directly into helping the transition of those that have been in combat. And the reasons why he is correct on this area is that in World War II, for every death, there were two survivors. In this conflict, there's about 26. And I may be slightly off on that statistic, but it is a remarkable improvement because of American technology. We have to spend more time helping those that are in combat, because the duration in time in combat is significantly higher than it was in Korea or World War II, readjust back into society. And then on the discharge areas, that becomes, anything, general discharge medical, those types of things make perfect sense.
Jason, I want to stick with military issues, veteran issues right now, but just sort of switch it slightly over to national security. Because we've seen a lot of frightening things happening recently, and whether they can be called hate crimes, gun control issues, national security issues, terrorist attacks, they seem to be happening with an alarming frequency, both here and abroad. What is your take on, our enemies' growing influence and power in the world stage?
Our military is the smallest that we've had in a generation. It's my understanding that most of our forces are smaller than they were at the beginning of the Second World War. And it is something that we have to seriously address. When you look at the budgetary issues that have been occurring, they add these continuing resolution, which are funding programs in the military that need to be eliminated, need to be stopped from being funded, and a serious discussion needs to take place in the budget. Then we have to have a hard look at what the role of the United States is going to be in these foreign and national issues. Now, if you ask me to have more boots on the ground, more monitoring, those are things that we've got to look at to people in intelligence, people that are involved in the region, on what the best venue and avenue is to enforce U.S. power and interests. But I think that we are going to have to spend time rebuilding and upgrading our military and restructuring it. Certainly, it can be smaller because of technological advances, and we see that on the even as close as the Cutter Mackinac. The older Mackinac had about twice as many sailors on it as the current one does. And so I get that, but we also have to have a serious discussion about rebuilding and overhauling our military and what the role is of the United States.
Could any of these issues be addressed apart from the military by using, adjusting or putting attention to our foreign policy, or just in the way that, we come across, as you hear a lot of times, that people will say that we bring some of these problems on ourselves by the way we deal with our enemies?
Well, the first issue, you can take a look at is the South China Sea. And detente has not been really very good there because of the Chinese increasing their footprint there, because they want to get into the oil off the Philippines, and then they want to get into fishing, from everything that I've read. You've got the situation with Iran and the nuclear deal that has gone there, and those are significant issues that have been working on detente. Then you go to the policies in Iraq and Afghanistan. And so certainly we have to continue to work with our allies, and certainly continue to work in a positive image for the United States. But we also have to have a rebuilt and overhauled U.S. military.
And that was Jason Allen, Republican candidate for the 1st Congressional District. He's on the ballot August 2nd, along with other Republicans Tom Casperson and Jack Bergman. On the Democratic side, you'll be making a choice between Lon Johnson and Jerry Cannon, so make sure that you vote. Plenty of local issues on that ballot as well. Copper Country Today will be right back.